This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 12th of April, 2022. John Hardy, your host here, and I will be flying solo today, so bear with me if you're noticing the strange audio quality today. I'm trying to record on a higher quality microphone, which means it'll pick up maybe too many details, but I like this experiment and don't like our old headsets. So on to business. We have a very interesting market here, selling off further as we look at the NASDAQ 100 support we've talked about in the U.S., this 13,830 level. It's coming into view. Again, one of the key drivers here for risk off is the ongoing rise in yields, and we have that continuing apace, especially at the long end of the curve, and I'll have more to talk about there. But the interest rate sensitive NASDAQ 100 a little bit further along and retracing to these levels, and that is getting towards a capitulation level that would lead us to potentially a test of those sub 13,000 lows that we saw back in, let's call it late March. Now, if you look at the equity theme baskets on the right, I've sorted on a year-to-date basis just to once again highlight the degree to which we've seen a tremendous turnaround in what sectors have been performing well and what sectors have been performing weakly. Of course, those very highly valued, and especially highly valued without proper earnings to back up those valuations, or earnings that are thought to be somewhere way out there in the future, aka bubble stocks, have done very poorly. We're down minus 31.6%, even with this recent attempt by the broader market to rally for the year to date. And then, of course, the commodity sector up 33.4% on the basket that we track there. India putting in a very respectable performance, barely down on the year. And this is ahead of the March CPI release today. Some of that negative energy yesterday may be getting an additional boost as we saw the White House, the Biden White House, out saying that it sees the risk of a, quote, extraordinarily elevated CPI reading today. I don't know if that's just to prepare the broader public for what is already in the consensus expectations as a very elevated number expected today, 8.4% for the headline year-on-year, 1.2% for the month-on-month. I think from an economist's angle, maybe more interested in how that month-on-month at the core looks. It is expected, again, at 0.5% month-on-month and over 6.5% year-on-year. And this would lead to, if we see a significant upside surprise above that, to fears that the PCE inflation data that comes out later this month, this is the Fed's preferred inflation measure, is also elevated, and that we see yet more needing to be priced in for that May FOMC meeting. But the general sense you get is that this market is, I think the tone has changed a bit here, and that's why on slide 3 in today's slide deck, I look at the yield curve in the U.S., the 2-10s, because we really need to look at why the yield curve has steepened quite a bit here after inverting briefly at the beginning of this month below zero basis points for the 2-10 slope, now at 28 basis points positive. So what is the driver here, and what was the driver as it was flattening aggressively, and now that it's trying to steepen here almost equally aggressively, at least in the initial phases of this move? And I think the prior concern was that the Fed is in control and that the Fed is making potentially a policy mistake by signaling too much tightening, that this will end up looking like a recession, and perhaps even fairly quickly so, as the Fed just sort of has to chase and will eventually catch up with inflation and therefore engineer a significant correction to the economy. Now, on the tightening side, or sorry, on the steepening side, what is the driver? I think maybe we've seen a pivot. There's two ways to look at it, or there's of course multiple ways to look at it, but the two ways you could look at it is that A, the more sort of intense message around quantitative tightening as a focus in the policy mix has the market fearing that those longer rates will come in higher as the Fed moves towards a more aggressive balance sheet unwinding. It is widely considered, without too much evidence really, that more aggressive QT could affect the longer end more than the shorter end. But importantly, the other narrative is that potentially this yield curve steepening and these longer rates going higher more quickly than the shorter rates is that the Fed is simply still behind and not yet able to catch up with the curve, that the risk is an inflationary mindset takes hold and we get something a bit uglier afoot here on the inflation side and a dynamic that is very different from what was expected before. So we really need to watch this yield curve simply as a signal, not about incoming recession necessarily, but as a signal on the narrative. I think it's very interesting. And then on the other chart I put up on slide three is that reverse repo facility. We talked a lot about that before the Fed was even beginning to wind down quantitative easing, because it was sort of, as it was easing, it was sort of tightening at the same time, because there was so much interest in accessing liquidity that they were forced to grow this reserve, or sorry, this reverse repo facility to some $1.7 trillion, which essentially acts as a kind of stored QE. So the market, this tightening is that the Fed is set to do, if the market is simply unwinding these repos to the tune of, let's call it $100 billion a month. That is still more than the pace that the Fed plans to tighten its balance sheet. And therefore, the Fed might not actually achieve any real, that is, relative to this reverse repo, any real tightening at all, even at $100 billion per month rate. So we need to consider how these all these moving parts interact as the Fed moves into a tightening regime. And then I think it's very interesting, and I'm hoping to have Stein Jakobsen on our podcast tomorrow to discuss this, because I know he has some pointed views on where equities might be doing. There's been some talk internally of, we're on the 2008 analog market here, if you will. On slide four, I tried to match up the 2007 and 2008 market with the current one by lagging the market back 730 weeks to get to an approximate match here. And you can see that back in the 2007 to 2008 rollover, after that October high in 2007, we began rolling over badly. And then there was a quite considerable rally and actually quite considerable drop in volatility all the way into May, when that classic seasonality kicked in, and of course many other factors in 2008. But back then, the May sell in May and go away, the saying very much underlined by the subsequent price action. Then this time we're wondering if the turn has come already here in April, but it's an analog worth considering where things might go. Also considering that the Fed's need to get ahead of this inflation question and to stem the risk of inflationary mindset will thoroughly dominate any concerns it has for now of instability in asset prices and, in other words, equity market corrections. And then there are many that are saying, look, when we have negative real rates to this degree, you might as well be in equities rather than bonds, which are a guaranteed confiscation of your money, because the equities have some chance of growing and posting revenue growth and earnings growth that can in some way match the nominal growth in the economy. And so, you can look back at history at some of the ultimate tests of that notion. And I know Peter has also talked about equity underperformance actually versus commodities, a very important perspective there, because there has been a significant rise in hard assets that has thoroughly outperformed weak commodity prices. But the ultimate test would be something like the Weimar hyperinflation in Germany in the early 1920s. And this is not to predict that we're set for a replay of that, but it serves as a model. And you can see that it's quite interesting, because as inflation was taking hold, I don't have an inflation index per se, but you have the German on that slide four right-hand chart. You have the German nominal index price in black, and you can see that it was rising quite solidly into 21, when I think the inflation was brewing quite badly, and it just continued to accelerate, especially into the fall of 23. But you see a change of the mindset there that took place in terms of the real value of equities, ironically, before the worst part of the hyperinflation set in, and that is that you saw the absolute low sometime in late 1922 in gold terms in the German stock market. And then that market rallied in real terms quite significantly, even through the very worst phases of the insane. I believe there were times it was going at 100% per day, or worse, the hyperinflation into late 1923. So there are many ways to skin this particular cat. We suspect there's some risk of the Fed needing to catch up, yields needing to rise, as we look at the risk of an inflationary mindset taking hold before some other dynamic could take hold in terms of the nominal ability of equities to perform together with the economy. Also, because as we've highlighted before, valuations are so very significantly high. And then on all of this, really, this whole entire subject, just a highly recommended podcast. I put it a highlight there on slide 5. Hidden Forces with Dmitry Kofinis, a great host, a great question asker, if you will, and a very great guest, Russell Napier, a deeply knowledgeable, especially of market history, and a very considered thoughts on how we are supposed to carry out this deleveraging cycle. He says basically that there are 5 methods, and most of those are politically unlikely or politically impossible, especially austerity, as we've seen, as because austerity creates the risk of instability in terms of populism and rebellion, and that the most likely path is via financial repression, and that Europe stands in line for that first. And I think that's a very interesting point, and I largely agree with the Europe being first on that front. Very highly recommended to have a listen to that and the points he makes, and I think we'll be reviewing many of these in the weeks, months, and quarters to come. I've come up with a similar list. I remember back in at the beginning of the or at the end of the financial crisis when we were looking at the scale of debt in the economy, but it turned out we were able to restart the cycle of bailouts, etc., from 2009 onwards, and we're back into a disinflationary mindset for quite some time. This time is different, and there's some great reasons to look at why and great explanations of why that is the case in this podcast. A highly recommended listen. All right, let's have a look at one of my areas of interest, that is FX, where we have the dollar continuing to rise, in part on risk sentiment, in part on concerns about the U.S. inflation release today. It'd be very interesting to watch what the dollar does post that release, but really the dollar is not super high beta to what's going on here, and I think that's not worth noting. I think, yes, it'll continue to firm a bit here if we continue to see even worse risk sentiment slides, a proper deleveraging event, etc. But I think the risk is, and one of these signs that the inflationary mindset is taking hold would be just a broad commodity advance, as the risk is really that with currencies all devaluing in real terms, that the priority for many countries will be to stock up on strategic commodities and anything strategic that looks at, you know, owning real assets, hard assets, versus owning reserves, which should only be held as a means of transacting currency, not as a store of value. So as we watch that, I think sterling looks in a particularly bad place relative to commodities, relative to the risk of real yields, etc. Perhaps maybe not worse than the U.S., but certainly technically it's looking quite heavy here, and sterling provides no risk, sort of safe haven angle, if you will. So watching the 130 level, been watching that recently, sort of held in there yesterday, but can it continue to hold? I have my doubts. You can see that on slide 6, the cable chart there. And also focusing on gold, which to my mind, if we aren't an inflationary mindset and a change around that mindset, and countries scrambling to hold something that has hard value, and even private citizens doing the same, what is the most portable and traditional hard asset? It is gold. So watching that carefully, we broke above an interesting resistance level around 1,966 yesterday. Perhaps the latest burst higher in yields tamed that move with a bit of a dollar strength, but it's rebounding a bit today, and very interested to see if gold can make a challenge at 2,000, the next key psychological level. You can see the earnings preview for the rest of this week. I won't spend any time on this, but the big banks reporting there, and one of the other key inflationary risks here would be if banks are feeling comfortable enough, given rises in income. Yes, some of these are not rises in real terms, but there is certainly a very tight jobs market, and some consumers are feeling more confident because they're getting, or workers are getting significant pay increases in some sectors as much as 20%. So do we see some lending activity going on and banks looking at lending as a way to get better returns than holding fixed income paper? Very interesting to see what the banks are reporting. This week, mostly on the of course, Main Street banks. Wells Fargo is the biggest of these, but it's more on that side that's of interest rather than the investment banking side as we work through this earnings season. And then on the economic calendar today, as I mentioned, the U.S. March CPI, so critical here as we're looking at this reading, how the market responds to this, and the sense of that are we building towards even a greater need for the Fed to make a move at the May meeting. And I think one of the most pointed and interesting comments, actually going back to that podcast with Russell Napier, one of the most interesting points he makes is that the last thing we should be doing really is caring what central banks are set to do. They are not in the control seat. It is the market forces that are going to force them to do what they have to do. And on the financial repression front, the government plays a far more prominent and important role in making a policy. So yes, we are continuing, of course, to watch what the Fed and other central banks are doing. And on that note, we do have the RBNZ up tonight with another rate increase, 25 basis points expected. Is their guidance in concordance with the market's pretty aggressive curve here? I think the Kiwi should not be doing particularly well. Yes, it has an impressive commodity mix in some ways on the food side of things, but it's also reliant on energy imports, and I have a hard time seeing the curve in relative terms extending aggressively. The curve, in other words, expectations for the RBNZ extending beyond what other central banks are doing. So a bit of a soft outlook, I think, for the New Zealand dollar. Maybe a little bit different for the Canadian dollar medium term, as we have oil prices where they are. Finding support yesterday, by the way, around the key $100 level in Brent, despite a plunge below that level at times intraday. 50 basis point move expected tomorrow from the Bank of Canada. This would be their first move of that magnitude since the year 2000. So significant there. ECB, they are faced with a tough task, and we'll be previewing that much more tomorrow and possibly Thursday as well. If I'm lucky, I get a special edition podcast sorted with our macro strategist, Christopher Dembeck, and we'll preview and discuss the ECB in that podcast set for release on Thursday morning before the ECB meeting. So stay tuned for that. All right, so we remain in a very defensive stance here for a number of reasons. The risk of the inflationary mindset taking hold, what that could mean, it could mean a lot on the positive side for commodities. It doesn't necessarily mean something good for equity prices. There are many ways to look at the equity market here, from deleveraging to store of value to able to track the nominal economy to too excessively valued, many moving parts in the equity market. And I think, though, our near to medium term concern is that equities could remain under pressure in this environment, at least in broad terms. And as that is what most of our clients are trading, and that is what most portfolios are holding, we just continue to exercise a caution on that front. So with that said, we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.